verses 22 through 32. That night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two maidservants, and his 11 sons and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." But Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." The man asked him, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answered. When the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome." Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." But he replied, "Why do you ask my name?" Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "It is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared." The sun rose above him, and as he passed Peniel, and he was, the sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon.
Hey, by the way, in this passage, we're really centered on an area that some of you who've been with us chapter after chapter may be going, "Hey, what happened to the first part of this chapter?" There's a sort of arms wrapped around this passage, if you will. Jacob is going to reconcile to a degree with Esau, his brother. This whole narrative, if you've been with us, has been about brother versus brother. And it's sort of one whole story tied together. So I'm jumping like right into the middle of the story because there's this pro wrestling event that takes place. And then around that is this brotherly story. So next week we'll pick up the brotherly story, if you will, and we're kind of jumping in the middle. So just those of you who are maybe like librarians and like things in perfect order, I cannot help you this morning. We're going slightly out of stream. But anyway, if you have your Bibles, again, we're in Genesis 32. We're going to live there, but I want to let you in on just a little something first, maybe some of the not so finer parts of myself, if you will, let you in on a slightly embarrassing sort of thing. And that is, when I was a kid, there was a stretch, maybe ages 7, 8, 9, maybe double digits, that I will admit that I was in love with pro wrestling. Anyone else in on this? Right on, right on. So if I say the word turnbuckle smash, some of you will know what I mean by the term turnbuckle smash. Anyway, in our neighborhood, we had this sort of corral of young guys, and we would, we rode bikes together. We did everything together. And one of the things we did together was we watched pro wrestling. And this is back in like the mid 80s. And back then, there was a wrestler in particular that I had a huge interest in, and his name was Don The Rock Morocco. He was The Rock before The Rock, right? So right now there's a guy named Dwayne Johnson who goes by The Rock. He's not the real The Rock. There is a better The Rock. And I don't mean Jesus. I mean Don The Rock Morocco. That's who I speak of, right? So Don Morocco is in this moment, you know, my favorite wrestler. And we're watching, I don't know what event it was. I don't know what's going on. Don Morocco was an imposing Hawaiian wrestler who was the Intercontinental Champion. So yes. And he was taking on my least favorite wrestler, a guy by the name of Greg the Hammer Valentine. Now, Greg Hammer Valentine was known for the figure four leg lock, which would take out your legs, maybe even like permanently injure you. And so I hated Greg and his long blonde mullet hair, and I just hated the whole thing. I hated Greg Valentine. Hated. I just can't tell you enough. Well, anyway, what happens is Don The Rock Morocco has a manager named Superstar Billy Graham. Not that Billy Graham. Don't get confused. Billy Graham did not moonlight as a wrestling manager, okay? There was another guy by the name of Billy Graham, and he goes by Superstar Billy Graham. And so in comes Don The Rock Morocco, you know, all Hawaiian of him. And in comes Superstar Billy Graham. And Billy Graham is an old guy. He's got a cane, and he's got these issues, and that was his shtick. So I'm watching this wrestling match unfold, and Greg the Hammer Valentine turns the wrestling match around at the very end, goes after Superstar Billy Graham and puts the old man in the figure four leg lock, which, if you know, that is devastating to anyone, let alone someone feeble like Superstar Billy Graham. So I already have an emotional reaction. I'm watching this in a living room full of guys, and I start to like what's going on here? Then not only does he take out superstar Billy Graham and Don Morocco comes in to save him, but then Greg the Hammer Valentine totally does a number on Don Morocco and takes him out as well, and he's knocked out, and they're saying maybe his shoulder is going to permanently injure him, right? So I have an emotional reaction to this event. I start crying and gasping for breath, and I'm like, no, no. And so tears start rolling down my 8-year-old face at this event, right? I'm sitting there in this living room, and I thought we were all in this together, all the guys. One guy looks at me, he's like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, it's Billy Graham, and it's, I mean, not that Billy Graham, the other Billy Graham, and Don, he's the real Rock Morocco, and what's going on? And my friend turns to me and says, reveals to me in that moment, what? You realize this is fake, don't you? Right? It's real. This guy says that, and all of a sudden I'm like, you know, when you hear that Santa's not real or the tooth fairy is really just your mother or like whatever that stark moment of realization is, it's like in that moment I felt horrible for several reasons. One, I'd been duped. Like I actually thought as an 8-year-old that the blood and the sweat and the undies and all that stuff was real, right? Which some of that is real, right? And I thought that everything was good and right. And I thought that Don Morocco was really injured. So one, I felt duped in the moment. Two, I'm crying now and as like at pro wrestling when no one else is. That's an embarrassing moment, right, in and of itself. I mean, there's a lot of things not going for me in this whole instance, if you will. Now, since then, of course, I've written off pro wrestling, and I don't want anything to do with it anymore. It's like a scarring episode from my childhood and whatnot. I don't think any of us... there's a part of me that doesn't want to admit that story, right, because it's just it's stupid, and it's embarrassing, and it's ridiculous and all those kind of things. And, you know, we're talking today about wrestling. we're talking today not about pro wrestling, right? That's fake, right? Today we're talking about real wrestling. Now, I know obviously there's a difference there. Obviously you're aware that there's a difference between pro wrestling as it exists, WWE or F, whatever the final initial there is, right, style, and the real wrestling that goes on here in this instance. But there's some correlation that actually takes place between one and the other, if you will. And if you'll indulge me, I think if I could sort of draw these parallels, I'm not going to make a sermon out of pro wrestling. That's not what I'm saying, right? But what I'm saying is we hate the one, right? You know, it's embarrassing to like that. So we don't like pro wrestling. No one admits it. I mean, if you do, you know, maybe you have like secret t-shirts at home that you bust out, but I doubt that you wear them mainstream. And if you wear them mainstream, then you have like a good level of confidence. Like, I don't care what anyone thinks. I'm letting you know I like pro wrestling, right? On the flip side of that, though, most people don't admit that. Why? Because we don't like the wrestling. And I don't think it's just pro wrestling. I'm like talking way more about pro wrestling than I ever have in my entire life, by the way, right? It's not just the pro wrestling that we don't like. You can lop the word professional off of that. Because I think in general, we just don't like the wrestling. Now, I don't mean the costume guys. What I mean is the act of wrestling. I don't think that we really like it. And not only do I think that we don't like it, but I think that we avoid it at all costs. And when I say wrestling, already it sounds like this very vague term, if you will. And I'm going to leave it there in the vague territory. A narrative like this, it's very dangerous to start saying, okay, we take this story and let me break it down for you exactly what the story means. But I think we can draw some things from it. And one of the main things I think we can draw from it is the admission that none of us like wrestling in the way that this passage is leading to wrestling. In other words, wrestling with God. Wrestling with the stuff of our life. Wrestling with the things that we maybe avoid at all costs. If you're familiar with pro wrestling, you know that the entrance is the grand thing, right? There's a guy on the stage who pulls out a microphone and calls out someone else by his lame nickname, right? Like, yo, Dr. Mess You Up, right? I'm calling you out. And Dr. Mess You Up is backstage like, what? You call me out? You call me out, right? And the video guys are right there. And he's in the ring, and it's this big pageant. Yo, Dr. Mess You Up, I'm calling you out here, right? So then they show Dr. Mess You Up, like, calling me out? All right, I'll rise to this occasion, right? Dr. Mess You Up, they have a video montage with like, Dr. Meshuup. The whole crowd is going crazy with Dr. Meshuup, poster board signs being raised in the air like, yeah, Dr. Meshuup comes out. The smoke machines start going on. The pyrotechnics are like, bah! The video montage of the greatness of Dr. Meshuup is playing in the background. And there's like all this pageantry, right? And the crowd's going crazy because they love him, or they're booing and throwing things because they hate them. But there's this giant reaction, and the response to wrestling in that moment is like a, I can't wait to take on this challenge. And so they kind of like strut into the ring and they parade around. Have you guys seen this stuff? You guys know what I'm talking about, right? And they're flexing, and he takes his sweet time, and he kind of disrobes, or maybe, you know, he does like his routine and like whatever that thing is. And there's all this pageantry leading up to it, right? On the flip side of that, if we were to call that into real life, do you know what we do? There's like someone that calls us out from the middle, right? Like, hey, Matt, I want to see you. And you're like, me? No. No, I'm not going out. Like, you walk out, you see the guy in the ring, you're like, I'm not going out there at all, right? You hear the pyrotechnics, you're like, ah, just wet my pants. I don't want anything to do with that moment. Because really, when it comes down to it, none of us like wrestling. We don't like wrestling because of what this passage represents. Because if you read the passage, you know that wrestling changes you. Unlike a WWF where everything is fine and good and they probably all go and hang out afterward. I mean, I don't know that. In real wrestling, what happens to us is that we are changed. This passage is filled with a transformation. This passage is filled with, there's a morphing that takes place. Jacob's name is changed. Jacob leaves with a limp. Every time he walks, he's going to remember what happened that night. Every time he can't sleep because the hip is flaring up again. Every time he tries to do something that physically he's slightly impaired to some degree, Jacob is going to remember that wrestling changed my life. And I don't mean in a holy way. I mean in a bad way. There's a reason we avoid the wrestling. And there's a reason that we run from the guy who's calling us out. Now, as a Christian, there's just a couple things I want to bring out of this passage, if you will. And there's a choice for all of us in this matter, this whole wrestling arena, just to keep the terms going, right? The choice for us isn't even about whether you will wrestle with the person, the thing, the being that you're supposed to wrestle with. It's not even about that. Look in the beginning of the text in verse 22. Then Jacob got up, and he took his two wives, and he took his female servants, two female servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. That's a Star Wars character from episode 2. Anyway, not really. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all of his possessions. And then verse 24 is the indicator of what is necessary for wrestling to take place. All right? The question isn't whether Jacob is willing to wrestle, and then consequently for us, whether you are willing to wrestle. That's like step number two if we had to create some linear steps. The first sort of thing to realize here is that Jacob is totally by himself, which means the first choice you have to make as someone to wrestle is whether or not you're even willing to be alone. Real wrestling can't take place until you and I are left in a state of solitude. And you can tell the place that, like, what does it mean for me to wrestle? Matt, what does that even mean for me to wrestle? What am I supposed to wrestle with? Let me just give you a quick hint. You probably can tell where you need to wrestle with something in the place that you're making the most noise. You can probably tell where you need to wrestle with something in the place that you surround yourself with the most people, right? Because we hate the struggle so much, because who really wants to wrestle when it comes down to it? We typically tend to surround ourselves, to insulate ourselves, so we don't have to even see the person beckoning us to the arena to wrestle in the first place. Now, some of you are wonderful at this. Some of you are magnificent keepers of the schedule. That's a lame way to say it, right? But some of you are very good at carving out time on a regular basis, on a weekly basis, maybe even on a daily basis. You find joy in the quiet moments of the day, right? When you're just alone with God, you love that, relish that, and you have a very healthy dynamic going on there. I got to tell you, of anything having to do with this passage, this is my Achilles heel, if you will. I am horrible at this. I mean, some of you who know me best know that stillness and silence, a lack of things to do, total solitude are my arch enemies. If they were wrestling, it would be Mr. Silence would be my I don't know why I'm doing Mr. and Doctor. they would be my arch enemies. Because when I'm left by myself, I finally have the time and the space to begin to do some searching where the Holy Spirit can actually begin to convict. And so let me surround myself with as much stuff as I can. You guys remember that? There was a Delirious song that came out like in the mid-90s. And it was, In the Secret was the name of it. Do you remember this song, right? The words were like, in the secret, in the quiet place, in the stillness you are there. Do you guys remember this song? Those of you who don't, those were the lyrics of the chorus was just, in the stillness, in the quiet place, you know, and it was a song intended to dive into that, like, in other words, it was signifying there's a beauty to sort of getting into this nice quiet place. And so I think we picture like an allusion is made in the Bible that like Adam and Eve walked with God in the cool of the day, like in the garden before everything went awry. And we sort of think like, oh yeah, I want to be there in the stillness because that's the place where like the sun is just rising and I've got my cup of coffee and God is there and we are just communing. And it's like this joyous thing for you. And I love that for you. I think that's great. But for some of us, the stillness isn't this beautiful, like that song does not apply to me whatsoever, right? I have to want that song. In the stillness, in the quiet place, that's not where I want to be. Like, I would rewrite those lyrics to go, in the stillness, I avoid it, right? Because in the stillness doesn't represent for me, like, a nice morning dew on the ground and the birds singing and creation just being in harmony with me. The stillness, I recognize there's someone waiting to wrestle me all night long. I'm not going to get any sleep tonight because I'm going to be wrestling all night long. I'm going to come out with a limp and there's something there waiting for me. Does this stuff make sense? In other words, the wrestling isn't just about whether or not you're going to wrestle. The first thing you have to do is send everything away. This narrative cannot take place until Jacob makes an active statement of, I am going to send away my possessions and send away the people around me and carve out the space and the time and the inclination for me to be by myself to even be able to wrestle in the first place. I think we often confuse ourselves that we can possibly wrestle. Let me rephrase this. I think I confuse myself thinking I can possibly wrestle while still maintaining a hectic life pace. That I can possibly wrestle with what really matters. That I can possibly hear what God really has for me. That I can possibly understand what God is calling me to do or be as a person while still maintaining all of you in my life all the time. Is this making sense? The first conscious decision, and I'm always saying this from a, yeah, I got to get my act together myself, right? Almost in a confessional way, the first point, even for me, is just to say, I got to figure out this space thing because verse 24 has to take place before the rest of the narrative can be. Now, let me ask you this. Why? The natural question comes up. Why would anyone want to do this work in the first place? Why would anyone really want to wrestle? Why would we want the silence? Why would we invite the solitude? Why would we even want to go further into this passage? Right? The reality is, let's just read. So Jacob was left alone, and a man, I love how this is just so non-dramatic. And yet you know that this is dramatic, right? It just says, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak, right? Like 7-8 words describe this encounter all night long, right? I'm thinking like, man, after 15 minutes, right? I mean, you're done, right? After 15 minutes of good, and after 10 minutes of wrestling with my cat, I'm kind of done with him, right? I mean, he's kind of a wrestler too, right? But good old Murph, I mean, he's done and I'm done. And then we can just cuddle afterwards. And man, you want to go to Taco Bell? Man, I'm done with this. Are you? Yeah, that's fine with me. You know, so like, let's go. I mean, I'm tired. You're tired. Let's get done with this, right? I mean, like literally 8 words describing this all night encounter. And a man waiting for Jacob calls him out. Jacob sends everything away and they wrestle all night long. That's a major dramatic. You can't infuse this enough, I don't think, with some kind of drama between the lines. Something major is going on here. What's going on here? Why would Jacob want to do this? Why is this essential? Because what happens in the passage? Jacob is asked who he is. And then Jacob is given a new name. What happens here? Let me read you this. Because Pope Benedict the 16th, he was talking about this passage. He said this. The church's spiritual tradition has seen in this story, this is what he says the story is about, has seen in this story a symbol of prayer as a faith-filled struggle, which takes place at times in darkness, calls for perseverance, and is crowned by interior renewal and God's blessing. Beautiful. Love it. You're right on, Pope. Right on. In other words, let me say it again. In other words, this story is a symbol of prayer as a faith-filled struggle, yep, which takes place at times in darkness, calls for perseverance, and is crowned by interior renewal and God's blessing. Now, I love it, right? There's a part of me that loves that because, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, that's what you mean by wrestling is praying, like, really deeply and meaning it, right? And persevering through a difficult time, that's the wrestling. Isn't that it? Right? Yeah, Pope, I totally agree with you. I think Benedict the 16th is right on when he describes that as, yes, you could preach that, pray that, know that, amen, we're all out of here. Except when I read that, there's like another depth to it that I'm just convinced is not quite in the description that the Pope so eloquently stated in a public prayer he gave. There's something deeper that goes on here, that it's not just like I'm getting deeper in my faith. What happens here, the reason that you and I would really want to go through this deeper wrestling is because we don't just become better people, we become different people. That what's happening here isn't just a, Bethany's becoming a better Christian woman. And so I wrestle because I'm called to do that kind of, sorry to pick on you, but you know, I'm called to do that kind of, like the reason isn't like Dustin is just wanting to be a faithful disciple. And so Dustin's willing to, I mean, like though, like that's not the core of the reason. The core of the reason is I don't want to be me anymore. I'm tired of being me. Do you ever feel like this? I'm tired of being me. I'm tired of acting like I act. I'm tired of falling for the same sin again and again. I'm tired of not having the power to do the thing that I can't do in the first place. You ever feel this way? I'm tired of being me. And sometimes it comes out, I hate myself. I hate when I get that way. I hate the things that I do. I hate the thoughts that dwell in the back of my mind. I hate the way that I treated him. I hate the way that I said something to her. I hate the fact that every time this happens, it triggers something and I can't get over it. Again and again and again, there's almost like this loathing that takes place. And it either takes you down this spiral or it brings you to a place where you're like, if I'm ever going to not be me, I've got to tell you to go away. Right? Do you hear what I'm saying here? Right? I've got to tell you to go away. All this stuff, my possessions, I've got to like, I'm going to shut the door to this room and leave it. And I'm going to go over here because for me to not be me anymore is going to take something. First of all, I've got to be alone. I need some stillness, right? One of my favorite quotes, I don't know who wrote it, so I can't tell you where to find it, but memorize it. Solitude is the furnace of change. I love it, believe it, don't enact it nearly enough in my life, right? In other words, to get over this identity, to get over ourselves, to really break through and not just like, I want to be a better person. Like sometimes I don't even want to be this person, right? That process is called different things in Scripture. dying to ourselves, right? Taking up our cross and following Jesus. Paul describes the work of moving from you to the new you as a rebirth and a new creation, right? That God makes you a new creation. Jesus describes it to Nicodemus as being, anyone? Being born again, right? And Nicodemus, now we throw that term around like it's nothing, like we know what it means, right? Have you been born again? And we can kind of like, but Nicodemus, the first person who ever heard that, freaked out, right? I don't know if you remember this, but Nicodemus is like, that's weird. I can't, I mean, literally Nicodemus is thinking, I can't re-enter my mother's womb. That's weird and gross. And I don't understand you right now, right? And Jesus is like, that's literally what has to take place in your life. And Nicodemus is like, you're not making any sense. I'm a grown man. You can't redo that process. That's a one-time process. And Jesus is saying, that's the whole idea between being a Christian. It's literally this brand new birth of being an infant and going through the growth cycle. Okay, I want that. Well, if you really want that, wrestling is required. I love what happens in this passage because there's some, it's almost really weird, right? One, the person he's wrestling with realizes he can't win. Okay, if Jacob is wrestling with God, how can God not win a wrestling match with Jacob? Boy, that's really weird, right? I mean, you could ask some serious theological questions like, okay, that doesn't make any sense. Is this really God? What's going on here? He wrestles with God, right? The man he's wrestling with says, let me go. It's almost daybreak. Like, I'm Batman and I can't be seen outside because I'm really Bruce Wayne and everyone will know it, right? Like, that kind of a thing is going on. And Jacob said, I won't let you go until you bless me. Right? And then after this, he says, what is your name? Now, I don't know what all this stuff means. And I don't. Right? Even after much research, all kinds of different commentators over the centuries have interpreted this passage to mean a million things. So if you read things into it and you feel the Spirit leading you toward a meaning, beautiful, beautiful, run with it. But if I could give a little bit of insight into it, I think what's happening here, I love the naming part. There's something in the wrestling where the person that Jacob is wrestling with says, what's your name? And he says, Jacob. Now we know the name Jacob, right, goes on to mean like a deceiver, like from the very instance, almost like a, boy, you Jacob that guy, right? Would be like, you lie to that guy, you deceive that guy, you're this manipulative guy. Now, I don't know this is going on here, and I'm majorly pastoralizing the passage, right? I'm like totally pulling a, I'm being a pastor here, but that's my job, so that's what I'm supposed to do this morning, right? Let me say it this way. I think symbolically, this is what's going on. In the middle of the wrestling, to move from, I don't want to even be myself anymore, to receive the new identity, there's something that takes place where God says, what is your name? And in that moment, there's a confession. My name is Jacob. In that moment, I think, and this is why I say this is just my conjecture, okay? But I think what's going on here is there is a naming of who you are in your current state. When I'm wrestling, there's something where I need to say, I'm Matt, and this is what I hate about myself. I'm Matt, and this is what's really going on. I'm Matt, and these are the things that I've messed up. I'm Matt, and these are the ways that I've done wrong to my wife, that I've done wrong to my church, that I've done wrong to myself, that I've done wrong to my family. I'm Matt, and these are the issues that I can't get over. I'm Matt, and these are the things that represent me in my old self. Right? There's something that takes place in the wrestling where you name who you are. God says, what are you here for? What are we wrestling about today? Like, I don't know that that's what's really going on here, but that's the sense that I get from this passage, is that there's this naming. And so Jacob names himself, and then God says, okay, now that you've been real with who you are, now I can give you the new identity of what I want you to be. I want you to name everything that you are, everything that you do. I want you to acknowledge your own self and be honest, be real, be authentic with the things that plague you. And then in that moment, what happens when you begin to wrestle? And I can tell you from experience, these things take place. There's something that happens when you like confess sin, when you carve out the time in solitude and then just get it all out there. Some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. You do that, and then somehow, in the middle of saying who you are, somehow after that, then God says, now let me show you, let me tell you, let me make you into who I have created you to be. It's almost like you have to state the old creation in order to become the new creation. There's something beautiful that takes place here that isn't just, a faith-filled struggle where we just learn perseverance and God's blessing. There's something like even more than that. I want something more than that. I don't just want to learn a little lesson at times. I want to like be recreated. That's what I want. I don't want to be me. I want to be someone else. I don't want to struggle through the same things. I want like a new life filled with faith. I want to not be myself. That's what I want. God, make me into someone that I am not. Okay, well then who are you? Well, this is who I am. And then you hear God. When you're reading the scriptures in solitude like that, and you come across a passage and you read something, we're so familiar with so many scriptures, it's almost obnoxious the way that we can just come to it like it doesn't mean anything. What does it mean for you to read that like in Christ you are a new creation? What does it mean for you to read that we are more than conquerors as the church? What does it mean for you to truly hear, maybe for the first time in a real way, you can do all things through Christ who has given you the strength to accomplish it? Or maybe that all of the negative things in your life are actually used for the good of the purposes of God, right? I mean, like all of these things are intended to be beautiful promises for us, helping us to construct our new identity as Christians. And most of the time we just kind of read them and they kind of flow off because we haven't properly dealt with sort of naming who we are and then taking on the full thing. And usually we're so busy that we're reading the scriptures like quickly and they can't really take root because we haven't like gotten rid of certain things. There is not just a betterance of us in the wrestling. There's actually an identity change that takes place. What does it mean to wrestle? What does that literally look like? Look, it isn't just the identity. If you'll notice, there's the limp as well, right? Something happens here. It says that the hand of the man that he's wrestling with touches his hip and it wrenches it. It sounds pretty painful, right? To wrench. I wrench my neck. I wrench my car. I don't know, whatever. Like, it sounds like something is twisted, contorted, broken in a weird way. And it said from there on out, he is physically affected by this thing that's taken place. This is a biblical notion. It's not just a Jacob thing. If you'll notice that Paul... Right. This is the most probably popular or familiar example that Paul wrestled with anyone know? Yeah, you're right. Paul wrestled with Paul wrestled with a thorn in the flesh, right? Paul had this thorn and people have tried to guess like what does that mean? But Paul actively wrestled. He had, I don't think it was a literal thorn like in the lion's paw and that one like the lion and the mouse. You guys know what I'm talking about? There's a nursery rhyme. Anyway, so I don't think it's like that. I mean, I think it was a literal, like some people say maybe Paul was blind. Some other people said maybe Paul had some kind of physical affliction and whatever it was that Paul wrestled with this very thing. But it's not just that either. Early on, we've seen already in the lives of Abraham and then the descendants, the act of circumcision, right? Circumcision was this act to physically mark us in a vulnerable place in such a way that we are then property of God, so to speak, that we belong to God, that we are not just ourselves, but we have been marked by a bigger purpose. This isn't just a Jacob thing. The reality is, second Paul writes about this beautifully, and I'm sure all of you have heard this. 2 Corinthians chapter 7, I think it's verse 14, says, we have this treasure in... Anyone? We have this treasure in jars of clay. Why? To know that this all-surpassing power comes from God and is not from us, right? In other words, Paul writes, we have the things of God inside this frail body so that we know that it isn't us and in our own strength. It actually is all God somehow through our frail body, somehow through this jar of clay, somehow through this pottery that if you tipped it over, it would shatter. Some of us, when you wrestle, you are made aware of your own human frailty. Usually, when you leave the wrestling arena, you will leave with a limp. There will be a noticeable scar in your life. You will be marked by what takes place there. Now, I know that sounds vague and it means different things to different people, because for some of us, it will be a physical wrestling. Maybe some of us with our resources, we got to wrestle with things that we don't want to talk about, right? Maybe some of us, it's a relationship and we got to wrestle, and maybe the noticeable scar is I'm not with that person anymore. Maybe the noticeable scar is I don't get to major in that like I maybe want to, but I feel called over here and I'm going to wrestle with it. Maybe part of it is I'm not going to go to that job on Monday because I know I wasn't supposed to work there in the first place. I mean, take your choice of whatever it is, but you will leave with something. You will leave it behind. You will leave it behind. And you will leave with a limp, or you will leave with a scar. You will leave with a noticeable mark on your life that you have wrestled with God. Now, I don't know that this is fully representative, but it's kind of the world I live in. So if you listen to Top 40 radio, right, it's real easy to, like, get involved with, like, that, I was going to say bubblegum pop, but that's what my mom calls oldies, right? Like, the, like, 1950s stuff, and they called it bubblegum pop back then. I don't think it's called that anymore. That's lame. But, you know, if you listen to, like, a Top 40 radio, what's going to happen is you're going to hear, like, someone like a Katy Perry, right? And maybe that's popular to a lot of people, right? I mean, it sells downloads, and it, you know, she plays Grammys or whatever, and there's this act going on there, right? Now, you know, Katy Perry's not even a real name, right? And she sings songs that she doesn't write, right? I'm not trying to pick on her. I'm just saying, in general, Top 40 radio is filled with people whose images are constructed by millionaires behind the scenes, right? Who sing songs that they mostly don't write, and it's out there for, like, the whole world. It's this, like, slick, polished veneer music. It's just manufactured music, if you will. Now, some people love it. That's fine. That's why I said I'm not sure this holds for everyone, but I'm saying for me, there's this correlation here where I hate listening to that kind of stuff, not because I have anything against anyone in particular. I don't like that. Like, what comes in my head, for example, there's a husband-wife duo that I love. They're called Over the Rhine, right? And it's a husband-wife duo from Ohio, from the Cincinnati area. And like, my favorite album of theirs is called Drunkard's Prayer, right? Where literally they talk about, we almost got divorced. We somehow stuck together. We wrote a bunch of songs about how we wanted to divorce each other. And then we made an album about it, right? Now, that's like this confessional weird thing. And it may not fully apply here, except that in my head, I'm putting these things together and I'm like, you know what? I don't want the veneer life. That's not what I want. If you were to really ask me, what I want is a substantive life. I want a life filled with substance going through the ringer. I want to wrestle, if you really ask me. Now, on my worst days, I don't want to wrestle and I'm constantly trying to avoid it. But if you really get to the core of me, what do I really want? I want a life worth living, filled with meaning, headed toward purpose. I really want my life to matter. And I want to give myself to things that matter. And I want to be surrounded by people that matter, right? So there's a part of me, that thread runs through everything. I want to listen to music that matters. I want to listen to an artist that writes their own stuff because it's honest and real and authentic. And there's, like, a meaning there. So when I turn on Drunkard's Prayer, I'm hearing someone talk about how the fact that their marriage almost fell apart and they made it. And there's a part of me thinking, maybe you could help me too. And I want to hear what that experience is like, because it resonates at a deeper level than, like, Whitney Houston, I want to dance with somebody. You know what I'm talking about, right? Like that song. It's like, I love that you want to dance with somebody, but that doesn't do anything for me. When it's done within 3 minutes, I've already forgotten what you said, except I just brought it up here. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I want stuff that matters. I want stuff that really belongs. I want something that's really substantive. That's what I want. It's the reason we have church the way we have church, right? We want to wrestle as a church with the things that matter. I am so not interested, and if you're new here, then learn this, at least about us, so if you leave and never come back, at least you could properly describe us to someone else, right? Like, we are not interested in just coming on a Sunday morning. In fact, we put less resources and time into planning Sunday mornings than most other places, because we're just super concerned about what's going on all week long. And what happens on a Sunday morning is just a blip on the radar of the overall life of the church. And so to that degree or to that effect, what we're interested in is not just like putting on a great show and hoping you loved our great show. What we're interested in is, well, we got a lot of things going on and we're giving ourselves to all of that. And we do this too. And I don't mean to say that like to slam one and then promote ourselves. There's a million different ways to do church, but that's the reason we do what we do. Or why we do it. Because I'm interested in some kind of substance. Because I'm not interested in any kind of veneer whatsoever. There is a choice for you and I reflected in a passage like this. Where we realize that we can either live in our own name and our own identity. And avoid the wrestling at all costs. And you can live in your own strength and power and have fun. Have a good life. Live it up, and your life will have a veneer, and no one will know any difference, and you will look fine, and everything will seem okay. Or you decide, I don't like my own name. I don't like my own strength. I don't like my own power. I don't like my own abilities. I have seen them for what they really are, and I realize that they are a flawed mechanism, and I need something more. The choice you either have is to choose to wrestle and find a new name or a new identity, or to keep your name and avoid the ring or arena at all costs. That's really what comes here. Jacob could have kept everyone around him. This passage wouldn't be right in the middle. We would go right to Esau. Jacob would be surrounded, and who knows how the story would have turned out. But at some level, the choices required of us to make begins with what we have around us, sending it out, not being alone. And then going through the wrestling thing, why? Because I believe in the end that a life of substance, that like, I don't know if you've noticed this. I can immediately tell if you've wrestled before. Have you ever like, you meet someone new and there's like something about them, right? Like I think in the Christian journey, I can, if I go to a pastor's conference, one, I hardly ever go to pastor's conferences because it's just not a good place for me, right? Even though it should be a good place for me. And you meet people and you're like, oh man, I can tell in 10 seconds I do not want this conversation to go on anymore, right? And the reason is not because I don't like them or not because they're a bad person. There's just an instant like, we have a totally different values. Like the moment you met me, you told me how many people go to your church. Like you're already starting on a foot I could care less about, right? Or you asked me that same question and you're asking me, you know, like you want to know like numbers and figures and buildings and whatever. And I'm like, I'm already wanting to get to the deeper stuff of life. How's your soul, right? What's really going on? What are you struggling with, right? And so you can immediately tell who's wrestled and who hasn't. Do you ever get that like sense, that sort of divination, if you will, right? Now, here's the thing about wrestling, and I want to end on this, but I want to make one more quick point. If you read the rest of Genesis, which we will get to, what you'll notice is that there are some moments that Jacob is called Israel. And then there are other moments that Jacob is still called Jacob. Right? What we often think is that I wrestled. I'm done. Woo! Man, that was the longest night of my life, man. I got the scar right here. Look at my scar. I got a tattoo over here and I got a scar over here. And I'm good. And man, that, let me tell you about that night. I wrote a book about that night. That was a crazy night. Man, I'm telling conferences about that night. That's great, right? Typically, that's what we want to happen when it comes to wrestling. And I have something really horrible to tell you. The wrestling, what? It never ends. The wrestling never ends. Now, you're free to leave the arena if you want and stop wrestling. But what I've learned is that there's always someone waiting in the middle of that arena for me to enter back in, because there's more wrestling to do. The reality here is that sometimes he's called Jacob and other times he's called Israel. I love at the very end of his life, I'll just read this to you. If you flip forward to the very end of sort of this whole story of Jacob and his family. We'll get into Joseph. Joseph is such a beautiful character and a model of discipleship and obedience. But in Genesis 49, I'm sorry, 47. They're before Pharaoh, and Joseph gets in good with Pharaoh. And verse 5, Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Your father and your brothers have come to you, and the land of Egypt is before you. Settle your father and your brothers in the best part of the land. Let them live in Goshen," which is in northern Indiana next to South Bend. And and if you, man, that was good. "And if you know of any, among them with special ability, put them in charge of my own livestock." So Jacob has gotten in his place of power. His father's old. The famine is all around. They're just trying to settle him. "Can I settle my family here? I want to take care of my family," like any good person would. But Pharaoh wants to see the head of the household because the head of the household is a person of honor. "Joseph, if you're this guy, I want to meet your dad." So then Joseph brought his father, Jacob, and presented him before Pharaoh. After Jacob blessed Pharaoh, Pharaoh asked him, "How old are you?" That's a great question, right? And Jacob said to Pharaoh, and I love this. This is Jacob at the end of his life, right? This is Jacob who's stolen the birthright, who stole the blessing, who deceived Laban, who's went through this whole thing. The character we're studying now, what does he have to say at the very end? This is what Jacob says. And Jacob said to Pharaoh, "The years of my pilgrimage are 130. My years have been few and difficult, and they do not equal the years of the pilgrimage of my fathers," right? In other words, Jacob has to go, "I got to admit that everyone before me has lived a real long time, and I'm not doing well." In fact, he dies just a few years later, right? "I'm going to die sooner than anyone else. My days have been few, and they've been difficult." And he likens the journey to a pilgrimage, which I immediately resonate with. Oh, yeah. This is like totally difficult. It feels like a long journey, right? And I love the admission of Jacob going, "Yeah, I probably could have." What if you read between the lines there, Jacob's also saying, "Yeah, I could have probably lived better. And I probably would have lived longer if I didn't live at such contention with people." The admission of the man in the middle of wrestling says, "I recognize that you've wrestled with gods and men." That's what the person says, right? And that sort of inclusionary statement, gods and men, is also used in Judges, and it just means everyone and everything. Like, it's a way of saying sort of everything around you. In other words, the guy said, "Jacob, I recognize that you have struggled with everybody." One of those people who just seems to can't even get going, can't even be okay even with himself. There's a beautiful resonance here that Jacob recognizes that the struggle is over the whole life. And sometimes we're called our own name. Sometimes we're called a new name. Sometimes we do well and then we slip back into who we were originally, and we have to re-enter the arena. Other times we just live in the arena. The reality is, and the bad news maybe for all of us, is recognizing that the struggle isn't just a one-time thing, we're done with it, and then we wrap a Christian bow on it, and we move on from there, right? The reality is that the struggle is a lifelong endeavor, and our life is a pilgrimage, and we recognize that our days may be difficult. But the thing in front of us is, do we want a substantive life or not? Do we want to live under our own name or not? Are we willing to even engage and wrestle in the first place? And it begins with the simple step of, are you willing to be by yourself? That's where the story starts. Let's pray. God, this morning we're thankful for this story and what it speaks to us about our own story. Certainly I recognize in my own life a lack of that solitude. And so God, I pray that you help with that solitude. Help us to have the courage to send people away, to send our possessions out, just to be by ourselves. God, those of us who know what we need to wrestle with, will you give us the strength and the courage to go there? Will you give us the discernment to know what it is that you want us to wrestle with? Give us wisdom. God, it seemed like Jesus was always telling us, if we have ears to hear, God, we need spiritual senses. We can't hear on our own. We can't see on our own. We need the Holy Spirit to help us with those things. God, as a church, help us to continue to wrestle with what it means to be an authentic community, to love our neighborhood around here, to be salt and light in the places that you have us. God, that's what we want. God, certainly we know that this is the right thing because we trust you. We love you. We lean on you. You alone can give us the identity that we were truly intended to live. And so God, I pray that you just help us to make a way for you to be able to change us, to renew us, to further recreate us. And we want to give you that permission today and in the days to come. In your name, amen.